Hello, Tony. My name is William Murray, and this is
Priscilla, son.
and we are recording the final exam. Angels from Time to Come. We're going to be answering five questions. I'm going to try and make some sense out of this article. I'm going to begin by question two, which is the peculiar thing about such moments is that by their unpredictability before the events combines with their retrodictability after, they radically defy the requirement that truth be independent of time. You're asking us what Turner is suggesting. How does Turner use the weak and strong Anthropic principle? And give an example in your life that could replace Turner's examples. Turner introduces the concept of geometrics in this example, and he introduces the entire school of thought that Plato originally introduced, which is that, truth doesn't have to trim its sails in order to be part of the winds of time. He uses several examples with Edmund and Otis. Odious and Quentin Compson and Anna Karina. In a nutshell, he's trying to lead up to the introduction of the principles of John Archibald Wheeler, his theory of geometrics, and introducing the concept of strong and weak anthropic principles. Anthropic principles is a circular argument saying that, in a nutshell, if something is true for us as humans, then it is true simply because we exist. Saying that our intellect is a way of ratifying our reality. Strong anthropic principles work very strongly in the past, and they believe that the universe must have those properties which allow life to develop within the same range of history. Weak anthropic principles apply more to the present and future, and they say that the principal observed values of all physical and cosmologic quantities are not equally probable, but they can take on range of restricted by the requirement that there exist where carbon-based life can evolve, and by the requirement that the universe be old enough to have already done so. Turner introduces the concepts of John Archibald Wheeler. That's what his purpose of this, of introducing these principles are. The nature of angels has to do with that which you cannot reason within the realm of your own mind and how that helps you rectify certain parts of your reality. And it's a way similar to quantum mechanics that various inconsistencies of nature can be rectified. All right, now I bring this up in my own life, an example of how the past combines with the future. Like the unpredictability before events combines with the retrodictability after. They radically defy the requirement that truth be independent of time. I'm going to go on a tangent. I'm going to tell you something about myself. I trust that, you may post this on the internet, you may not. All right, not supposed to break my anonymity, but my own example of how this fits into my own life is I'm a member of the 12 Steps, which is, I'm not going to tell you which particular program, but basically it's a series of ritualized traditions by their very nature affect the present weekly. So similar to the weak anthropic principle that's in the future, we give our will and our life over to the care of God as we understand them, similar to the angels, and we do not have the ability to control events in our future, and we do not try. We concentrate on the present. We do have a very strong sense of where we came from. We don't care to shut the door on our past, nor do we care to ever forget how we got there. And we change our lives daily as an attempt at living amends for those who we hurt in the past and examine our lives as a way of making that a mechanism by which we uncover our character defects, our self-will when riot, and use both a way to keep ourselves sober and to make our negative behavior and lend our experience, strength, and hope to other individuals. So here is a basic weak anthropic principle. For the future holds true as we concentrate on living just for today, and the past is a very strong principle indeed, that the past absolutely existed because we are indeed in the rooms of the 12 steps. Okay, so I trust that stays between us. Priscilla.
That was really, that was really deep. That was really awesome. I really have nothing to say to that. You know, you really explained everything. You've taught me more now than I would have gotten by reading this article. I gotta say, Tony, that, you know, this article was really hard to get my mind around because, one, he talks a lot in terms that, for one, I need a dictionary to go through, but the anthropic principles are in itself very dense. They're very hard to digest and absorb, but it's a good way to think. And I'm getting cues here to say that, you know, it's true. It's that they have a lot of similarities to quantum mechanics and the angels, but I'm the one who choked, by the way, in the space exploration debate. Saying that quantum mechanics fills in the spaces of what we can't explain, you know, Skip is telling me here, it's like the electromagnetics and things. Okay, so I'm thinking that's about 4 minutes. I'm gonna skip down to number 5. Your question is, the quote is, by the time we observe most things that are larger than subatomic particles, they are already part of healthy, functioning, mutually supporting reality systems, to be altered only if we know the fault lines of its construction and have the technology to pry them apart. What arguments is this author negating? How did the universe get to where it had before humans came upon the scene? Who or what are the sensitive observers? Okay, so I'm going to start off with the second question. How did the universe get to where it had before humans came on the scene? The universe got to how it was today through processes. Like the author said, anything larger than subatomic particles come together and form another quote-unquote thing altogether. But with human beings in the mix, we begin to tamper with the fault lines and start to alter them. Take, for example, bacteria. Bacteria, in its normal state, will reproduce at an exponential speed when given an ideal environment and food supply. So if you set up an environment and alter it, such as, you know, for example, in penicillin, you can use a natural process to make something beneficial to you when you can, you know, when you figure out what the key fault lines are and you have the technology like pipetters and, you know, microscopes to change it. Okay, next part is the sensitive observers are those who have the consciousness to be observers. You know, the author starts to list and gauge the sensitivity of certain objects, like a rock is less sensitive than plants, which is less sensitive than animals, which is, you know, humans are more sensitive to animals, and, you know, he even brings in the topic of angels, which is obviously more sensitive than humans, human beings. So basically, you know, a sensitive being must be able to have a capacity to observe the happenings in a real sense and not just, you know, have a mindless seeing of everything and just, you know, just to go with it kind of thing. He said earlier that there was, if you're a crude observer, then, you know, your report will be, you know, not, it won't be very, it will be very, Let's see. It would be very, you know, also crude. The brute consensus of matter. But as you become more, you know, in tune to what you're looking for, then, you know, it becomes more sophisticated and so on and so forth. So here is Skip again.
Hello. Okay, we're answering number five. Okay, the author is discussing how systems, namely subatomic particles, when they're described, they're already part of healthy, functioning, mutually supporting reality systems, and they can be altered only if we know the fault lines of its construction and have the technology to pry them apart. The author is trying to negate the concept of finite certainty of reality. And the angels, just like quantum mechanics, and there be magnetic fields and electrical field lines, there is very strong evidence that had these particular physical principles been altered, much like the way in which someone observes a situation, and by observing it, their evidence that the situation A existed, and B, that the observation of the situation itself is a determinant of its origin and a determinant of its future, the two anthropic principles Wheeler's developing. So too the sensitive observers that he goes into. He makes a quote that the fruit of any process is also an observer of it and also a partial determiner of its nature. Now, if you're going to talk about mechanics, and you're going to talk about subatomic particles, you're going to talk about biologic evolution, you're going to talk about any type of system in and of itself, the ability for a system to evolve is a function of its creation. So whatever it is that's evolving, that's creating pressures on it to change other parts of the system, that A has to exist and B has to have the ability to affect the future. And because the future is not certain, it's a weak anthropic principle, but it's very strongly evident that that existed from previous pressures. So you have this continuum of pressures that create what we call reality. Now, just as we don't have the ability to create absolute certainty within our own realities, the nature of angels in themselves provide the next step of what it is that we can't describe, much like what arguments within science that can't be rectified. And there's a similarity between quantum mechanics in obtaining physical reality and rectifying certain things we cannot describe about our own physical reality, and quantum mechanics, the angels, which in and of themselves are going to take a philosophical standpoint and going to go change that. So that's where he's going. All right, that's it. So I'm going to go through. My next question is, okay, I'm gonna go jump to number six. Oops. Okay, and that just as we now are able to synthesize living matter, so we'll be able to synthesize self-conscious thought and feeling and imagination. One day that evil distinction between the artificial and the natural will be thrown down, and we will have escaped the mind-forged manacles which alienate us from the creative and the self-reflective evolution of the rest of nature. You want to know what the mind-forged manacles are that Turner is alluding to? And how do we get into the mindset that we are separate from nature? How does quantum theory in general and quantum entanglement specifically rectify this situation? Okay. What are the mind-forged manacles? Well, the mind-forged manacles have to do with the fact that if we're so smart and we've become the highest evolved species within the universe and we're the highest of the evolutionary change and we're essentially the one that is the end point of a series of continuum of events that preceded us, the we effect. Why do we have limits of our own knowledge? What is it about ourselves that have created the situation that our intellect is so great? Why are we not able to understand such things as spirituality, such things as faith? Why do we need the concept of faith? Why do we need the concept of angels? What is it about our physical reality? So as you have quantum entanglement stating that one particular principle of nature in and of itself can determine other aspects of other principles, and these are all not mutually exclusive of each other. And quantum theory, which describes the ability for electromagnetics, basically electrical field lines and magnetic fields, that if they were not finite qualities in and of themselves, they would be able to describe much more phenomenon of the universe, and things like the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, we could say with definitive statements about natures of such things as the mechanics of an atom, instead of talking about things in terms of probability. Okay, the mind's forward manacles are our own pride, our own ego, our own ability to not be able to rectify our conscious reality and being too proud to admit it. How do we get into the mindset that we are separate from nature? Well, in and of ourselves, as man continued evolving, man, at one point in time, the lower evolutionary species, primates, Homo sapiens, Java man, they all were a part of nature, intricately involved and intertwined within nature. And then as man started to become quote-unquote smart, he eventually got to the point where he thought he was too good for his surroundings, started to separate himself, and as such, he's removed himself from the very thing that created himself and has prevented him from being able to ultimately understand the universe as a result.
Okay. Hi again, Tony. Well, for me, I thought that, you know, the mind-forged manacles it was talking about, and I may be wrong, but how I figure it is that the mind-forged manacles are how people view themselves. And he was talking about the unhappiness of a genius, and how people actually put these manacles on themselves to, you know, like, that everyone has the potential to be, you know, geniuses, but these manacles of, you know, society and whatnot, and the flaws of nature, you know, it's, and like human labor and all this, it holds them down. And, you know, we have the potential to start doing, you know, artificial intelligence and cybernetics and everything like that, and it's all because we understand the workings of our mind. And if we don't, you know, release ourselves from these chains that hold us down, then, you know, we were able to, like I said, synthesize subconscious thought and, you know, feeling and imagination. Robots now are getting more and more and more, you know, ingenious in how they're developed and how they function and everything like that. You know, it's separating us from nature because we have the thought process, the cognitive process to do it. And, you know, as we go on, you know, more people will free themselves from these manacles after the way has been paved. So, you know, as we go on, it'll just get better and stuff. Okay, so the next question that we're going to do is number 3. And the quote is, "Events and objects are constituted by the information that they exchange with other objects and with themselves. And the means by which that information gets exchanged are, as forms of light, subject to quantum uncertainty. How does this relate to the polarized lens experiment and the functions of the angels?" Okay, so the polarized lens experiment talks about how you take one polarized lens and, you know, hold it up to some light. And if you were to take another polarized lens and place it directly parallel to it, light will pass through almost as if it were one lens. But if you tilt the lens so that it's 90 degrees to the first lens, then, you know, all of a sudden there'll be no light will pass through. And then, so, you know, process of thought, you'd think that if you were to take a third lens and place it about 45 degrees to the 90 degree, then, you know, still no light will pass through. But it does. And then, so, you know, quantum physics says that a wave of light reaches the first two lenses, or the first lens, and does not, in quote unquote, does not know where it wants to go. But, you know, as after the second lens, its mind is sort of made up, in a sense. And so then, like, the waves are negating each other. And then, but then if you put the third lens, the light has to make up its mind again, and it goes through the third lens. And then, so then, this is, you know, related to, the quote is related to the polarized lens experiment, because, you know, light has to travel through each lens, et cetera, and then, that is how the information gets through filters of lenses, and so on and so forth. How it relates to the angels is that, you know, this is under quantum, you know, the uncertainty principle, saying that, you know, if you were to, anything you measure will have some bit of error to it, that you would never be able to completely and accurately judge anything and measure anything. So then, you know, the angels in this article kind of fill in those kind of blanks, saying that, you know, if you were to have, if a lot of times there, you can't really fully explain something will happen, and how are you can't explain it scientifically, so, you know, the angels are there to kind of help it along, in a sense. And, you know, you can never be absolutely and fully certain that what you're measuring is absolutely correct, which is kind of like your faith in angels, which is, you know, you have to see if you can kind of sort of get through it, and so on and so forth. Okay, this is Skip now.
Hello. Hi. Okay, quantum certainty, the exchange of information using light, and the function of angels. Okay. Light has been described as waves. And part of the theory of quantum mechanics has to do with the fact that light, even though it's described as waves, can be seen as discrete units of energy traveling in space over time. Now, the polarized lens experiment and the ability for quantum certainty to exist. The polarized lens experiment illustrates quantum certainty and the ability for various states to exist and the ability for that to be exhibited through creating a situation in which there's a pressure placed, and of all the possible outcomes, one is more likely than the others. So, what we got going on here is, in a nutshell, quantum certainty is indicative and is similar to what the function of angels do, in that we come to the limits of what it is that our conscious reality can explain physically about principles within nature, and that is explained by quantum mechanics. And then as one approaches the forward boundary, the weak anthropic principle, which is very much determinant of the future, but though poorly predicted, we have no ability to predict the future. We know we are there, evidence that we view ourselves, and that as we go forward in time, the angels bring about the similarity between the information we can't understand about our reality physically and that which we can't understand about our reality philosophically and theologically. That's where the angels come in. So similar to how the angels rectify things which we don't understand about other things related to philosophical and theologic nature, the quantum mechanics and quantum certainty principle rectify what it is that we can't understand about physical principles. That's where these two come together. The polarized lens experiment is an example of creating a pressure which, of all the possible certainties of nature, you create one outcome and how that relates to what's going on. So I think that kind of explains it. Priscilla, your thoughts?
That sounds pretty good to me.
It's a discussion.
So. Oh, okay.
So things cool? How was your day? Things all right?
Yeah, sounds good to me. I'm preparing for the next one. That's okay.
Okay. And now, done.
Number four.
Okay.
Number four says, in quotes, "Reality is, when unobserved, only approximate in its nature. It is a probability function or wave function specifying a number of possible states which it might assume if challenged, at which time the packet of uncertainty that constitute a particle before it is measured is collapsed, forced retroactively to make up its mind." How does this statement slam into classical scientific thinking and ancient religious dogma? We kind of went through this in the other ones, but what I kind of got out of it when I was reading the rest of the paragraph and the next paragraph afterwards is saying that, you know, light and any form of information is limited to the speed of its propagation, and anything we observe is already in the past of the observing eye. For me, I was thinking that, you know, like, for example, stars are a really good example of this. You know, we see stars and we see them twinkling and, you know, in the sky, and we see stars shooting across during, you know, meteor showers and whatnot. But I was always told that, you know, this has already happened much, much, much time before, and that the only reason we can see it now is because of how long it takes for light to pass through. And I was always, you know, very impressed by this idea. So, you know, how it slams into classical scientific thinking and religious dogma for me is just saying that, you know, with scientific thinking, I would like to believe that, you know, what we're doing right now is a current thing, but really, everything that we're studying has already happened. It's a process that we're looking back at, that we're trying to mimic and alter for ourselves. For religious dogma, it's, you know, it to me it almost is in line with religious dogma, because when you're thinking of religion, you're looking to the past and you're trying to observe and improve and alter towards another goal. And, you know, we're forced to alter our personality and our, you know, thinking and our behavior because we think of what has happened in the past. That's what I got out of it.
Hey, Tony. Okay, reality is, when observed, only an approximate of its nature. It's a probability function or a wave function specifying a number of possible states it might observe if challenged. Okay, basically what Mr. Turner is describing is the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, in that when we come down to the limits of what it is that we look at in the way of subatomic particles, our ability to understand them becomes limited, and such as we can't predict the exact position of an electron within an orbital around an atom, and we describe it as a probability. When we get to the nature of the core of scientific and religious dogma, we come to the limits of scientific certainty, which quantum mechanics rectifies, and religious dogma, which science cannot rectify by its very nature, and the angels provide the next step, which is faith. Now, such as, of all the possible forms in which something can assume if challenged, you know, and that packet of uncertainty that constitute a particle before is measured, if collapsed, we can look at that meaning from a number of directions. The example that I will use is we have the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. We look at a particular function of something, and if you took the derivative of something in nature, you cannot predict all aspects of it because nature in and of itself is not a closed system. And by taking that derivative, infinitely moving the interval between when that point is measured to zero, that derivative line, that point total slope of a tangent, is going to be a statement that can be used to extrapolate and make other definitive statements about the nature of what that is. So you could use enzyme kinetics within biology. You could do rates of change. There's various examples in nature. The point of it is there are limits to what humans can understand, both scientifically and theologically. Quantum mechanics rectifies that which cannot be understood within the particles, and those particles create the larger system. And although Newtonian mechanics describes large items well, there always exists the predictability that there is extreme examples, what they call statistical outliers in any situation. And as we look at our conscious reality, we have no ability to see what it is beyond the limits of what it is as mortals we can view, and that's what the angels rectify. So we're human, and the things which we cannot see, as we have the self-evident argument that if we exist, then we must be able to observe ourselves, by the fact that we're here and we don't understand is evidence that we are not supreme. And the angels rectify that. So Heisenberg uncertainty principle, the angels, and how that relates to science and religion. Back to you.
Yep. Sounds good to me. Okay, Tony, so we're done. I want to say that this class has been very enlightening. I probably have not ever had a professor like you. You're quite, you know, all this other stuff about, you know, everyone else being a jerk to you. You know, you're really a good professor. I really enjoy your enthusiasm and everything like that. I just want you to know that if I wish that I had more time and more capacity to get into the class more. But in any case, this was a very good experience, and you know, I, you know, hope the best for everything that you do. Yeah. So good luck with everything, and if I see you around campus, I'll say hi to you too.
Hi, Tony. I want to make a small comment on Mr. Turner's paper. The nature of quantum mechanics, the nature of the content of what it is that we're describing, in and of itself is extremely abstract. However, Mr. Turner, I have one beef with this man. He comes up with words that I have not found in any English dictionary. He invents his own words, Tony. He's a journalist. He's not a physicist. He got a pretty good idea of what he's doing, and he's obviously a very smart individual, but he can't make up his own words. That's not allowed. So, very deep article. Good points regarding the nature of theologic thought and how, at the limits of scientific reason, much as you get to the forefront of any type of research, those which are the most profound and sharpened and competent researchers at the front line, and I've seen this myself with being in the field and having a few Nobel Prize people as my clients when I was a biotech salesperson, they have a very, very, very strong relationship to theology. So just as angels rectify that which philosophically and theologically we cannot rectify between ourselves and that which we exist in a larger area of the universe, and how evolution and how principles in nature can only describe certain things about how we came to exist, so too that theologic thought came to rectify that which philosophically is beyond the comprehension of our mind as mortals. So it's an interesting article in that there's a very strong relationship between quantum mechanics and faith and the angels, and it's a very interesting article. It's got a lot of good implications, and I think a lot of people haven't been exposed to this type of thought before. So that in itself, yeah, so it's, you know, it's a, I think it was fun to read, and thank you. I appreciate everything you've done this semester. I wish you good luck in your future, and it's been a pleasure to have you in class. You know, you're very competent, you're very dedicated to your students, and you're a very big asset to the staff at San Diego State University. I hope they appreciate you.
Go, Tony! Yay!
Thank you.